sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria, Ton, and Andy here with you. We are coming to you from J&J Garden Center, where the tomato frenzy is underway. We want to start the program then and talk about how do we take care of tomatoes. But the first thing we have to start with is, what do we do before we actually plant our tomatoes? Who wants to start?
Well, it's like building a house. You have to start with a good foundation. And so if your flower beds or your vegetable beds have sat for a while, the best thing to do is get in there, and you need to rejuvenate, get them rejuvenated up. And so one product that we sell here is the Oakdale compost. That's become very popular. That, just get it tilled back into the garden, some fresh topsoil. If it holds a lot of water, get some soil pep in it. If it doesn't hold enough, put in some peat moss or something that will help. And then also you need a nutrient value, and that's where we say start with a good compost. Now, whether it's Oakdale or a Nutrimulch or something like that, a lot of gardeners too, some of the gardeners that have been doing it for a long time will put down a light, even a triple 16 fertilizer, but go very, very light, because you don't want to make your garden so, you can actually make it too hot that you can actually burn your plants. So just kind of get it kicked in gear. I actually, my garden just seemed like 1 year just quit on me and didn't really do anything. Hmm. So I went in and threw in a bunch of that Oakdale, stirred it all in, and it honestly, it lasted me 2 full seasons before I had to do anything else to it.
Right.
But you got to start with a good base and then put in some good plants. If you start good, you typically finish good.
Right. Ton, describe why you don't want to keep planting your tomatoes in the same place every year.
Well, we talked earlier about the strawberries getting a buildup of diseases over the years being in the same spot, and that when you switch your patch out, you move to a new place and you use the virus-free plants. Well, the principle holds true for your vegetables, especially the tomatoes, to where if you have the room, you don't want to plant them in the same space more than 1 out of 3 years. The same reason being is you can get a buildup of insect pests and diseases in the soil, especially Verticillium and Phytophthora, which are really not great diseases because their spores can stay in the soil for years and years. Now, many of our modern tomatoes are Verticillium and Phytophthora resistant, but if you grow them in the same spot for 5 or 10 years running, that you get such a buildup of those diseases that they will overwhelm that resistance.
So then let's talk about how do we plant the tomatoes? Because you, Andy, were mentioning earlier, depth is a big deal.
It is, and a lot of people are afraid with, like, anything you plant. They always tell you plant at the same level as what the soil is in the pot, whether it's a tree or a shrub or whatever. Now, that typically is true. But when it comes to these vegetables, and it doesn't really matter if you're doing zucchinis or any type of your cucumbers or tomatoes, you want to plant them deeper. And they'll take that, and what it does, it helps stabilizes the plant against the elements like wind and different things.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, if you look at a tomato, on the sides of it, there's these little fine white hairs. And if you plant those, all those little fine hairs will turn into a root system. And so now you've got a bigger root system to take up nutrients that's right out of the gate.
You were telling me, was it last year, that I could plant them on the side?
You can.
And I didn't believe you, but I did it anyway, because I was like, no, I'm going to plant this thing. Kind of describe how you do that and why it works.
Well, sometimes you can dig the hole deep,
because if you have them and they're too tall, right?
And so what I have done when I've grown my own tomatoes, and you get excited and you start them too early and they get a little leggy. So what you do is you dig a trench about 3 or 4 inches deep, and maybe a little deeper, but you lay the tomato in there horizontally so it slowly angles up with where you want it to pop out of the ground, and you just bury it in. And as Andy was talking, these will freely root. And there's also nodes that will form above the root zone on the stem that will form more what are called adventitious roots. And so you put those sideways, and you just gently curve the tip of the tomato.
Or you'll break the stem.
Else you will.
You
they
don't
can
do
be
that.
A little brittle. Yeah. But that is a great way to plant taller
they
tomatoes.
They did actually great. I was skeptical, but they did very well.
Yeah, so your tip of your tomato is actually away from where you're actually going to water. So you want to make sure. But, yeah, if you got a tomato that's, you know, especially you get into some of those cherry varieties, mm-hmm. and they can get so tall and spindly at times. Yeah, just dig your trench, lay it sideways, bend the tip out, cover it all up. You're good, and it's good to go.
Okay, let's talk about fertilizer, the do's and don'ts
well,
of fertilizer.
USU has a tomato fact sheet that will tell you timing. And Andy's very correct. You want to be minimalistic on fertilizing your tomatoes, because if you overdo it, you either scorch them or you get a lot of beautiful foliage and very few tomatoes.
You don't care about. You want those beautiful tomatoes.
And so Triple 16, as Andy mentioned, is a good one. Osmocote is another good fertilizer.
At the beginning of the season.
Yes. And so the fact sheet actually gives a couple of – there's when you first plant, and I think 4 or 6 weeks later, you do it one more time, and then you leave them alone. But it's minimalistic, you know, just within like a teaspoon or two of Triple 16. And then the Osmocote, because it's slow release, you can just put that down.
Okay. Let's talk about water.
So the best thing on watering is I try to tell people when it comes to any of these vegetable gardens, we need to do it from like the farmers used to do it. Water once a week and just soak it and then leave it alone, especially early on in the spring. Now, once it gets into the summer months, you'll probably have to kick that up to a couple of times a week, maybe even three. But there again, soak it and then leave it alone. Your plants will tell you when they need it because they'll start to wilt a little bit. But the problem is if you overwater and over-fertilize, you're going to get a lot of growth. I've heard of people getting tomatoes 10 feet tall, but they don't get any type of fruit on them, and they don't know why. Well, they're just over-fertilized, and all that nutrient value is going to plant growth, to the foliage. So really just kind of watch it. The other thing that I tell people when they water is water those tomatoes from underneath, on the ground. You know, the farmers all do it. You know, these little ditches. You can get soaker hoses. You can get a drip system. But I tell people, please do not do overhead watering with like a sprinkler system. Number one, it washes the pollination off of the blossoms, and then you don't get fruit. The other one is it can also, because you got water all over those leaves all the time, you can start setting in different type of diseases that you can get into them, and it's just not healthy. So water underneath, water really good. Leave it alone.
My favorite way to water tomatoes is either with drip tape like Netafim or with the drip hoses. And you can purchase those at any local garden center or retailer, and they're 20 feet long, and you can actually just... they attach to each other if you have a longer row. But I'll make sure what I'll do is just because I'm watering from a hose bib, I'll get a timer, but I'll put a pressure reducer in line so that I'm watering it at about 25 pounds, 25 PSI, and then those drip hoses do wonderfully. I don't blow them up with my 100 PSI irrigation. But I've also gotten black plastic and put it over the top of my furrows and planted through with a drip hose underneath. And with that system, boy, like you say, once a week, and you just get so many tomatoes, keeps the weeds down.
Okay. Yeah. Folks can find out more on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page as well on how to take care of their tomatoes. We are at J&J Garden Center for the Tomato Frenzy, and that means you have, Andy, just a wide variety of tomatoes for people to come choose from.
We've got so many, and every year we just keep adding and adding. And all of a sudden, you know, these people will find that favorite one, and they'll come back year after year, like this past year. And I hate to even mention this on the radio, but there's one called Chocolate Sprinkles.
I've tried it.
It's a little cherry tomato, and people love it. It sold out so fast this year. I'm trying to find more off other growers, but I just can't seem
to. It's kind of the opposite of the Sun Sugar. The Sun Sugar is more sweet, and that one is, like, a little bit tart.
Yeah. But we've got everything that ranges from the cherry tomatoes, the Roma-type tomatoes. We've got the big, you know, sandwich tomatoes, the hamburger tomatoes. We've got the heirloom tomatoes, little salad tomatoes. We've got them all in all colors, shapes, and sizes. So we're really whatever your preference is. We've got something here that can meet that need.
Okay, and right now, though, the reason we're calling it the Tomato Frenzy is because there are so... You're going to save a lot of money when you come in today.
Absolutely. They're $2.99 right now. That's half off of what they normally are. It lasts for another full week. We've been going a week, and it's been really good. People are coming to get them. But it's we're stocking very, very heavy. Yesterday, they told them they moved 22 trailers full of tomatoes into mm-hmm. that building. And we've still got a lot more to go. So, but come in. That way you make sure you get your favorites and have a successful garden.
Right. J&J Garden Center Tomato Frenzy is underway. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Ton and Andy with you. We are at J&J Garden Center for the Tomato Frenzy. One of our listeners would like to know, what is the sweetest cherry tomato?
Probably the sweetest, the one that we say that tastes just like candy, is probably Sun Sugar. Now, if you want that true tomato taste, I'd probably say Sweet 100. But this year, I got a whole bunch of others back there. There's one called Sunset Torch, Red Cherry Large.
I had somebody freeze-dry the Sun Sugars. You cut them in half and freeze-dried them, and they were sweeter than candy.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
They're yummy.
Have not freeze-dried them. So what should you spray on your tomatoes that seem to have bugs on them already? Uh-oh.
Well, if you're seeing bugs, it may be aphids.
That's what I would think.
There is a green peach tree aphid that it can be harder to get rid of. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't spray the blossoms and see if some ladybugs show up. But once those blossoms drop, I would use a horticultural soap and just spray in the morning or evening. And if that doesn't help, there would be some other things you can, but always start with a horticultural soap.
Okay, what type of fertilizer do juniper and pine trees need?
Just fertilizer. It's fine. Triple 16 or 20-00 lawn fertilizer. The trees don't care, honestly, and just a fertilizer if they need it. If they're growing healthy,
you don't need it.
You probably don't need it.
Okay, Phil is on the line in Saratoga Springs. Good morning, Phil. What was your question?
Well, I noticed on my peach trees, not on the stems, but on a couple of the limbs, a little tiny hole with a little oozing. I assume that's some kind of a bug, and is it terminal, or what do I need to do for it?
Well, it could be. You say it's on the tips?
Not on the tips, but on the limbs.
On the limbs. So I'll have you look up a few different things. One of them is peach twig borer, but those usually get into new growth to where the tree shoots some new growth, and then a certain percentage of the new little twigs or branches flag over and wilt down. So there could be peach twig borer. It could be Cytospora, which is a bacterial disease. And then Cytospora causes gumming. And you'll see it more on the trunks and the major limbs, but you'll see a lot of heavy gumming, especially in the spring. And if you cut behind it with a knife, it's dark brown or black. And then the other thing I'll have you look up is called shot hole fungus, because especially in the limbs, that can cause some gumming and limb death.
Okay, and as I look those up, then they'll have whatever I need to do with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, USU has fact sheets on all three, and they have really good pictures. Other, like Colorado State University, has really good fact sheets on all of them. And so look up both, but the Cytospora, the shot hole fungus, and the peach twig borer would be the main three. It's a little early for greater peach tree borer, which generally gets into the base of the trunk. You may see some gumming from it, but the greater peach tree borer doesn't become active until late May into June.
Okay, yeah, I've wrapped my trunk pretty tight, and I pulled back the wrapping on that, and I don't see anything on the trunk. It's just
that's good. That's good.
Okay, one other question on watering tomatoes. I have raised beds. They're about a about a foot deep, maybe a foot to 15, 16 inches. You said to water them once a week. I have a lot of vermiculite and peat moss in my soil, so it the water goes right through it.
Yeah, and so the watering is going to be different in raised beds and containers. Andy, do you want to take that one on?
You know, the thing of it is, where they're not planted directly in the ground, they can require a little bit more water, especially just depending on the type of soil that you've got as well. And then also, because of the side of those boxes are exposed to the sun can heat up the side of those boxes and help dry it out a little bit too. So you might have to kick it up to a couple times a week, but there again, just water really good when you do. A lot of people get in the habit of watering every day, like 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes. It's better to water for 30 minutes and then leave it alone for a couple of days at a time and then do it again.
Is that pretty good, too, for the whole, the whole raised garden area?
Absolutely it is.
Yeah, and as Andy said, your soil is going to dictate a little how often you need to. And so you want to dig down 6 inches and just check the soil. But if it's a pretty big raised bed, then it should have more water holding capacity. And the more often, well, not more often, but the more you can water deeply and less often, the better. And if you've got a good raised bed mix, a couple times a week may very well be enough.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. Next listener would like to know, will 2,4-D kill whitetop?
It's about the only thing registered for residential use in lawns that will. You may have to apply in the spring and fall. What I would do, though, just to get some synergistic effect, is find a good lawn weed killer like Trimac or maybe Ortho's Weed Be Gone that has 2,4-D plus maybe two or three other ingredients in it so that you can get a better kill yet. In open areas where there's not desirable plants, Roundup, something with glyphosate or Kills-All, is going to be the best bet. But in your lawn, something, a lawn weed killer with 2,4-D as an ingredient, is going to be the way to go.
All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. The KSL Greenhouse coming to you today from the Tomato Frenzy at J&J Garden Center. We'll be right back.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria, Ton, and Andy with you. We are at J&J Garden Center in Layton. We're here for the Tomato Frenzy. Hope you come out and see us this morning. The Tomato Frenzy underway this entire week. We had a personer asking about those little fungus gnats on tomatoes and how to get rid of those. Ton, what do you tell them?
The tomatoes obviously didn't come from here, but a lot of times just potting soil itself has fungus gnat eggs in it, mm-hmm. and a few of them aren't bad, but they get really problematic when plants are consistently overwatered, and not just once, but for days or weeks at a time. And so if they have black little flies that just kind of pop up when they tap the plants and then settle back in, those are fungus gnats, and the best thing they can do is dry the tomatoes out. And you don't want to wilt them down, but get that soil really dry, irrigate, and then let it dry down again. And over a period of a week or two, that will kill a lot of them because the eggs will not tolerate dry soil, and their larvae, which are feeding on the roots, don't tolerate dry soil. So that's my best guess without really seeing
things. So when they put those outside, though, when they decide to plant those outside, wouldn't that maybe
will also
take
help
care of,
take care of them?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next listener is asking about how to get rid of violets and ivy growing in their lawn. Hateful. Ugh.
Yeah,
I have the same problem, so I can say that.
The violets in a lot of areas of the country are just tolerated, almost like we do clover as part of the lawn.
I can't.
But there are sprays out there. There's one called T-Zone that has triclopyr in it. So anything with triclopyr in it will take out both of those fairly well.
Okay, next listener wants to know a little bit more about sugar maples. They've had three huge ones in their backyard. One of them died, and now the second one has more light green leaves. And they're wondering what you might think is happening and if they can save the tree.
It's probably iron deficiency and maybe deficiency of other soil micronutrients.
So what's their best option?
They need to do it soon, but they need to get a chelated iron containing EDDHA iron, so Miller Ferroplus or Grow More chelated iron, and mix that up in a gallon or in 5 gallon buckets and apply it under the canopy of the trees. The sugar maples are one that are more susceptible to nutrient deficiencies in our alkaline soil, and they do better up in the benches than they do in the valley bottoms.
All right. Jim is in Orem. Good morning, Jim. What is your question? Jim, are you there? Okay, let's possibly go to, have we lost our connection? Okay, let's go to Harrison in Salt Lake City then. Good morning, Harrison. What was your question?
Hey, I just had a question. I've got buffalo grass that I planted a couple years ago, and it's starting to green up for the summer, and it's always been kind of patchy, and I'm really going to make it thrive this summer, and I've never found any good resources about trimming it, you know, if you want to let it grow as long as you possibly can so it starts to thrive, or if you want to trim it lower so it starts to grow out, and then once it starts to send out its runners in the summer, I've kind of hesitated to trim it then because I don't want to suck those up into the lawnmower and not let it spread that way. But I wasn't sure what the best practice was.
Well, you're not going to suck up the runners in the mower. The ones that are spreading are not really mowable. And so you're fine there. And so I'd more need to have you define your purposes and what your definition of thrive is. Is it manicured mowed lawn? Is it a prairie look? What are you going for?
A prairie look, but it's just, and it like there's a lot of, you know, empty patches in between, you know, some clumps of it, you know, like 10 square feet will look great, and then the next one over is like a really scraggly patch.
So how often are you irrigating?
In the summer, I'll give it a deep water like once every 2.5 weeks.
Probably why it's struggling a bit. I mean, it is drought hardy and it will grow in that condition, but if you're wanting it to thicken up, you're probably going to want to water it about every 7 days at least until you get it thicker and more. It's not as often as you'd water your lawn, but I would deep water it about every 7 days. Now, is your soil more clay or sandy?
More clay.
Okay, but buffalo grass actually likes that, but I think water more often, and I would consider fertilizing this spring and maybe in the fall before it goes dormant, so sometime mid-late September, to see if you can beef it up that way. I mean, you can grow it like a prairie grass and leave it more natural, but if you want it to thicken up, you're going to have to give it more resources.
Gotcha. And for the fertilizer, just anything for like a standard,
yeah, just anything 20-00, 16-16. There's a lot of them out there, but just fertilize spring and fall and see, you know, in the future, once you have it thickened up, you could probably just get away with one fertilization, especially if you were mulch mowing it, so where the using a mulching mower, but fertilizing once or twice a year will really help too.
Great. Well, thanks so much.
All right, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, is asking, is it time to prune their forsythia?
Wait until they're done blooming, so another week or two, and then I would go ahead and prune it. Use renewal pruning to where you're taking about any branch over 3 years old, so you just go in toward the base of the shrub as much as you can and find the biggest branches and take those out first until you've removed a third of the canopy, and then you can give it a really light haircut.
All right, back to the phone lines. Cindy is in Blanding. Good morning, Cindy. What was your question?
Good morning. I have a five-year-old peach tree that's starting to get just a little bit of, looks like sap or gummy coming out of it.
Where's it at on the tree?
It looks like it's coming right out of someone's cut off, you know, maybe before it got to us. Right on the trunk.
Okay, and is it, so it's up on the trunk and not really at the base of the tree?
Correct, it's up on the trunk about 4 feet up.
Okay, that may be a disease called Cytospora. There's also Pseudomonas that can look very similar. And that what you'd want to do is just look up a fact sheet on Cytospora from USU on whatever search engine you like. But it's spelled C-Y-T-O-S-P-O-R-A. Okay. What I would do is get a knife and then just kind of carve behind where you see the gumming. And if it is black or dark brown, that's probably that. And all you can do is just remove the canker. But look for that first because it... What? You just cut it off the best you can with a knife.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, that's the best you can do. And do you wrap the trunk in the winter with white tree tape or paint it or anything?
Yes. Yeah.
You did?
Yes, we did. The last 2 years.
Okay, and is it canker forming where you had the paint or the tree tape?
Yes.
Okay, because it still can get in. Excuse me. Look that up. Allergies are getting me a little bit, but...
Oh, you too, huh?
Yeah, look that up and see if that's it. I mean, it could be greater peach tree borer, but it's too high on the trunk. And when you see that gumming, it could just be that the tree's doing it because that's what the peach trees do. But it could also be Cytospora or Pseudomonas canker, which the treatment is the same for both.
Okay. Okay, with it being a five-year tree, is it better to just dig it up and start over, or should I keep trying?
Well, how big is the canker?
Not very big at all.
So, no, I wouldn't, you know, it's kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I would see what the canker is and see if it just very carefully cut behind it and see if it is black or not, because sometimes the stone fruits just have gumming and there's no reason for it. And so it may not be the canker, but it's the most likely thing it would be if it does have a disease. And so I would investigate, and if it looks like the canker is spreading, then you could go ahead and plant another tree somewhere, but keep wrapping the trunk in the winter, take the wrap off in the spring, and that's going to be the best thing you can do.
Okay, great. One more question.
Cindy.
It's leaning, and we've got it staked up. Is that okay for it?
For about a year. And if you leave it longer, it becomes dependent on the stake, and it will lose basically structural integrity, and it will be more likely to blow over when you take the stake off.
Okay, so I can leave that stake on for one more year?
For one calendar year, and then it's recommended you take it off.
Okay.
Thanks, Cindy, for your
call this morning.
We are coming to you from J&J Garden Center where the tomato frenzy is underway. Andy is with us. Andy, we've been talking about the tomato frenzy because you have your large container tomatoes at half price right now, which makes it the frenzy. But I'm also seeing these gorgeous spring blooming perennials.
You know,
go by on
so what
carts.
We try to do is this time of year, we try to have our full showing is what we call it. And so we've got all these perennials that are outside, all our fruit trees and regular trees, shrubs, grasses. It's all ready to go right now. And then the other thing that we try to do, too, and you've probably noticed this, we've got all our annual flowers are ready. A lot of them are nicely in bloom. We've got some big planters that have all been done up. We had a huge shipment of those come in that are both for full sun, full shade. The nice thing, too, about planter gardening, if it does look like it's going to get cold, you can always slide that
bring it in the
garage and then put it back out. We've got all our hanging baskets are ready.
The perennials, I mean, you're safe to plant those now. They won't be affected.
Absolutely. Anything that's outside right now, of course, is safe to plant. All the other stuff is okay. Just watch those night temperatures, and if it looks like it's going to get cold, cover it. But, yeah, we've got a ton of perennials. They're gorgeous.
A lot of people noticing also that their lawns don't look so good, so they're looking to take some action there. What have you got?
So we've got actually a five-step fertilizer program. And if you haven't done it already, you need to get your fertilizer down that's got the pre-emergent in it. And what that does is it takes care of any of the little weed seeds that are germinating. And get that on right now as soon as you can. And the nice thing about it looks like we're going to have a little bit of rain maybe next week. So if you can get that fertilizer down and then just let Mother Nature water it in for you, and it'll be awesome. You've noticed some yards that look really nice and gorgeous. That's because they put their fertilizer down probably a month or more ago, and they look nice, fully lush. But it doesn't take long this time of year once you get a fertilizer down on the lawn, because your day temperatures are warming up, your night temperatures, that lawn will really start to react and come out of the dormancy that it's in.
Okay, tomato frenzy underway until next Saturday.
Till next Saturday. And it's fully stocked. I just went back there to check on them, and they're still stocking right now with all new fresh product.
Perfect. All right. Come see us. We are at J&J Garden Center in Layton. We'll be back with your calls and questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Ton and Andy with you this morning, taking your calls and questions. We are at J&J Garden Center in Layton, where the Tomato Frenzy is underway. Hope you come out and see us. Tomato Frenzy underway until next Saturday. Let's go back to our phone lines. Chris is on the line in Immigration Canyon. Good morning, Chris. What was your question?
Oh, hi. I live in the mountains. And half of the lot is wild. It's mainly gamble oak and maple and snowberry and things. But with the drought, it gets really dry. A lot of it dies away. So I'm trying to clear all the dead stuff. But trying to keep my wild part of my yard healthy. Is there a role for fertilizing or fertilizer stakes for the gamble oak trees to make them healthier?
No. If you're going to do anything, I would just use a granular fertilizer. Just because you get more of the nutrients spread over the soil a lot more evenly. And so, are you supplement watering at all, or are you just relying on Mother Nature?
We're in the periphery. We have the rainbirds spraying the periphery of it, yeah.
Okay. I would just put mid to late March, or as soon as the snow melts off, is a good time to fertilize the trees. And I just do one application a year.
Okay, and how long do gamble oaks live?
They can live for hundreds of years. Some of the older ones, if you get deep into the canyons where the pioneers didn't cut them down, you can find gamble oak that are easily 200 to 300 years old and maybe older.
Well, it's interesting that this is the chaparral, and the chaparral was meant to burn. So, I mean, it's kind of concerning. They get out all the dead wood. They decrease the fire burden, but...
Well, and the gamble's oak, the reason it has thrived is because it has root suckers, and even if the tops burn, as soon as the fire's gone, if it's not too late in the season, within 6 or 8 weeks, new sprouts are coming up from the ground. And so there are areas it grows that it doesn't burn. What?
We don't want the fire to burn our houses. It's
no.
Not fire mitigation, right? Yeah. Okay, so granular fertilizer and water it as you can, huh?
Yeah, especially in the spring and early summer. It can go semi, even though it has leaves, it doesn't grow very much after we're regularly in the 90s. And so any growth you're going to get out of it is going to be before mid-June.
I see.
All right.
Thank you.
Chris, thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton's wondering why their lilac bush may not have many leaves or flowers. They say it looks healthy, but it's very sparse.
It could be a lot of things. It could have a root disease in it that's restricting water flow. It could be a lack of fertilizer. There just could be a lot of things.
What would you suggest maybe they put on there, just regular fertilizer?
I would just use some triple 16 fertilizer to see if they can spur some new growth. If the fertilizer doesn't work, it's probably a vascular wilt disease, okay. And there's not going to be much they can do about it.
All right.
I've noticed in a lot of situations that after about 20 to 25 years, lilacs can start to decline.
Oh.
And there's just nothing you can do. Many of them live longer, but it's about that 20 or 25 year mark that I start to see a lot of more diseases in them than, you know, when they were younger.
All right. We are at J&J Garden Center in Layton for the Tomato Frenzy. Andy is with us, and you've got just about all the popular varieties of tomatoes over there.
I have all the popular varieties and then some and then some.
And then some heirlooms.
Yeah, heirlooms, Romas, cherries, your nice big ones, beefsteak tomatoes, fun new colors, different tastes, different shapes, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, different sizes too, but your large tomatoes are a special price.
They are. So they're all at half off right now. That's $2.99 each. And then we scale down into, like you said, we have, if you want an abundance of tomatoes, we've got the little four packs. And if you want a whole flat, there's 48 of them. Or if you want a little just tiny single, there's Some that sell as cheap as 95 cents.
All right, you need to come see us. We are at J&J Garden Center in Layton.